Thanks. What was happening on my end was it looked like Awakening Together Radio had the mic and I couldn't take it. It wasn't available for me to grab. But after I left and came back, it worked out just fine. So hello, everyone, and welcome to Enlightened Leadership with the Tao Te Ching. And today I will be starting from Chapter 1 of the Tao. I just want to say that it looks like Larry did not show up to claim his 30-minute slot before me. So what I'll do is claim it, and what I'll do starting after Thanksgiving is I'll do the Tao Te Ching for an hour from 2 to 3. So it will be Anne then from 1 to 2, me from 2 to 3, and then Jacqueline from 3 to 4, and Ken says he did announce that change. So I'll start that the Wednesday after Thanksgiving. The book that I've decided to use is a new one that I haven't read before. By that I mean the translation. This is the Tao Te Ching translated by Derek Lin, L-I-N, Derek Lin. I have two other copies of the Tao Te Ching here in case we want to look at some other translations. I have the Tao Te Ching by Stephen Mitchell, which is the one we use in MPP. And then I also have the Tao Te Ching by Dr. Wayne Dyer. But my primary one is going to be this one by Derek Lin. It's always fun to read a new translation of the Tao Te Ching. So, here we go. The Tao, by the way, this is verse 1 or chapter 1. The Tao that can be spoken is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the origin of heaven and earth. The named is the mother of myriad things. Thus, constantly, without desire, one observes its essence. Constantly, with desire, one observes its manifestations. These two emerge together, but differ in name. The unity is said to be the mystery, mystery of mysteries, the door to all wonders. And again, I want to point out that my purpose for reading the Tao Te Ching is enlightened leadership, right? So that's going to be my focus. You could say that's going to be the filter through which I share from the Tao Te Ching. So certainly this verse could be looked at in a lot of different ways, but I'm going to look at it from the point of view of the question, how is this helpful to enlightened leadership? That's really the question that I ask. So for me, this is last week I called it groundwork. You know, when I was sharing the guidance from San Damiano, well, to me, this is also groundwork. This is groundwork for the Tao Te Ching. It's the very first verse is telling us that there are two ways to see, right? There are two ways to see. And I'm going to start with the second one's desire. So if I, as a leader, have desires, let's say I have a desire for the retreat house to make a financial profit. Let's say I have a desire for, Cheryl, who's managing the retreat house, to act in a certain way. Let's say I have a desire for how retreatants, when they come here, will see me, how they will perceive me. Well, all of these desires are, thank you so much. Okay, all of these desires are going to keep me focused on manifestation, which is what this is saying. You know, if I want the retreat house to have make a profit, I'm going to be focused on how many people are coming, how much money we have compared to how much money we're spending, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if I If I have a desire that people see me a certain way, I'm going to be paying attention to what, how people treat me, what people say about me, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what the Tao Te Ching also says, what the Tao Te Ching also says is that there's another way to see. And that other way to see comes from being desireless, from not wanting anything particular from this enterprise, from just following guidance, just being inwardly focused and doing what I'm guided to do in each and every moment. In effect, not having eyes for the form. And this is really important, again, for leaders to pay attention to. Because we're either going to get lost in the form, or we're going to have our focus on the heart, have our focus on inspiration, and let the form unfold. Now, another thing that's really interesting about this particular verse, the way it is translated by Derek Lynn, is that it says, these two emerge together, right? The form and the formless, they emerge together. It says this unity is said to be the mystery. The mystery of mysteries, the door to all wonders. It's really very similar to a tip I wrote this morning, which you guys won't see for about a week, but a tip I wrote this morning with NTI Revelation. Even as one clears away their attachment to the filter of the mind by letting go of false beliefs, by learning not to be concerned about what the mind is chattering about, etc. Even as one clears away the filter of the mind, the body's eyes still see things. You know, the body's eyes still see a table, an oven, a coat, snow boots, mountains. But what happens with enlightened sight is in spite of what the body's eyes see, enlightened sight knows everything as consciousness, everything as aliveness, everything as the perfect unfolding of presence. And this is how the two merge together. You know, and I think sometimes people get confused, you know, because they wonder how an enlightened person, for example, who sees only the self, can still be practical, you know, can still follow a recipe and cook, you know, can still work a job, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why, because the body's eyes still see the same things. They still see a chair, a rug, a checkbook. What's different is the focus. Instead of being focused on desires and outcomes and how things are supposed to be, in my opinion, it's always just an opinion, enlightened leadership is focused on being. On just being right now. And, you know, it's funny because in A Course in Miracles, the manual for teachers, it talks about how, you know, the enlightened person doesn't really look any different from the outside, except maybe their forehead isn't as wrinkled, right, because they aren't worried. But they look exactly the same. But they don't feel exactly the same. They feel joyous, they feel spontaneous, they feel alive. And so one thing that we can do as leaders is we can pay attention to where we are now. This is how the teachings of Inner Ramana ends. It's talking about how you have no control over the what. Your choice is the where. And by where, it means where am I now? Am I focused outward on form? Or am I focused inward on guidance, on truth? So let me read this. Let me read this translation again. The Tao that can be spoken is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the origin of heaven and earth. The named is the mother of myriad things. Thus, constantly without desire, one observes its essence. Constantly with desire, one observes its manifestations. These two emerge together, but differ in name. The unity is said to be the mystery. Mystery of mysteries, the door to all wonders. So I'm going to say, for the purpose of enlightened leadership, the message, and again, we could look at the first verse of the Tao for a long time because we can find many messages in there, but we have narrowed our topic. So the message of the first verse of the Tao is to remember to not want anything from whatever tasks you're working on, whatever life you're living. Remember to not want anything. You know, have no intentions. Just be. Be with whatever the body is being moved to do. Be with whatever is around, but don't want anything. Lesson number one. In fact, just for the fun of it, I'm going to type that in the room. Lesson number one. Don't want anything. Because as soon as we start wanting something, our eyes are going to be focused on form. All right, let's move on to number two. So this is verse or chapter two. When the world knows beauty as beauty, ugliness arises. When it knows good as good, evil arises. Thus, being and non-being produce each other. Difficult and easy bring about each other. Long and short reveal each other. High and low support each other. Music and voice harmonize each other. Front and back follow each other. Therefore, the sages manage the work of detached actions, conduct the teaching of no words. They work with things, but do not control. They create, but do not possess. They act, but do not presume. They succeed, but do not dwell on success. It is because they do not dwell on success that it never goes away. Karen is asking a question about lesson number one, which was don't want anything. And Karen says, and would it be to want everything just the way it is? Yeah, I might want to take the word want out of there just to be very clear. It would be to be happy or just be with everything just the way it is, right? I'm going to read what Jacqueline has written here. Do not ask, but listen only for what you are to give. When one asks for himself, one is listening to the mind that thinks is separate from other. When one does not ask, not even for the smallest or humblest of needs, one is knowing there is no need to ask, for there is only the whole which always serves itself. And that is a thought of awakening. Yeah, so I guess what you guys are saying is we've heard this lesson number one before. But of course, the trick is to embody it, right? Especially if we're leaders, embody it. That's what we're here for. So lesson number one, don't want anything. Just be, right? So this second verse, or this second chapter, as I was reading the first part, what it said to me is that judgment creates opposites. Let me read part of this again, and let's see if you hear what I heard. When the world knows beauty as beauty, right? So it's not saying there isn't beauty, but when I define it as beauty, when the world knows beauty as beauty, then ugliness arises. So like I can look out at these mountains and say, oh my gosh, these mountains are so beautiful. Then I might drive through some areas of northern Arizona that are Native American reservations that's really just very, very arid and say, that's ugly, right? I'm going to compare the beauty of these Colorado Rockies to the arid, almost moon-like landscape of northern Arizona, which was given to the Navajo Indians. And I'll define one as beautiful and one as ugly, but that's because judgment got in, right? That's because judgment got in. When it knows good as good, evil arises. So, you know, when I start looking at myself or others, you know, we giving to charity or whatever we're doing, and I say, that's a good thing. That giving to charity, you know, being selfless, good. But then someone else not giving to charity or not giving as much, that's not good, right? That's bad. Somebody stealing from a charity, that's evil, right? You know, so once we start defining in that way, we start having duality. Let me just read this part of the verse again. When the world knows beauty as beauty, ugliness arises. When it knows good as good, evil arises. Thus, being and non-being produce each other. Difficult and easy bring about each other. Long and short reveal each other. High and low support each other. Music and voice harmonize each other. Front and back follow each other. Now, one thing that I think is very interesting about the way this verse unfolds is it's not saying necessarily that judgment is bad. You know, we could say that the mind needs to make some practical judgments. For example, if we are singing, you know, maybe it's helpful to be able to follow the tune. You know, if we are cooking, maybe it's helpful to be able to follow a recipe, to know the difference between a teaspoon, a tablespoon, a cup. If we're going to the bathroom, it's helpful to know the difference between the toilet and the bathtub, right? So if this isn't necessarily saying that judgment is bad, it's just pointing out that it is through the act of judgment that we get these opposites. And, you know, this is something that we want to be aware of. I would say that as an enlightened leader, what this means for me is that I want to know the difference between practical judgment and unnecessary interpretation. Practical judgment and unnecessary interpretation. For example, the retreat house does have a particular mission, right? It was guided. It's a place where people can come in order to take their next step with God. That means it's not a bar, right? I mean, that means it's not a place where we're going to have this liquor cabinet and every night pulling out the liquor and turning on the loud music and people getting drunk and pairing off and having sex. Right? It doesn't fit. But let's say someone does come here, and let's say I find out that that in their room, you know, they're drinking whiskey and they're getting drunk and maybe they're hitting on some of the people of the opposite sex here. I need to know the difference between practical judgment, which we often call discernment, and unhealthy judgment. Unhealthy judgment would be to judge this person in some way as bad, right? Healthy judgment or discernment might involve asking this person to leave, right? Asking them to leave without the judgment on who they are. You know, maybe talking to them first, seeing if they want to let go of the way they're behaving and get in aligned with the way we are, and if not, asking them to leave. But that's really the way that I read this first part of this verse. Because again, even though it's talking about how judgment creates duality, you can tell that this isn't saying that judgment is always bad. Because again, long and short reveal each other. High and low support each other. Music and voice harmonize each other. Front and back follow each other. So although it starts off pointing out what wrong judgment can do, right? Ugliness arises, evilness arises through wrong judgment. It also points out that there's practical judgment. Which again, we often use the word discernment, you know, just so we can discern between the unhealthy and the healthy judgment. You know, Michael Langford doesn't have that same language that we tend to use. He doesn't use the word discernment. He uses the word judgment to refer to the healthy judgment. And so when he has heard us sometimes in Awakening Together talking about judgment as if judgment is bad, and of course what we're doing really is referring to the unhealthy judgment and how it doesn't benefit us. But when he's heard us talking about it that way, you know, he has sent me emails pointing out the benefits of judgment. Like, you know, right judgment lets you know when you're following a teacher that maybe isn't in your best interest, so you can leave that teacher, right? And I think this is what the Tao is saying. There is both the unhealthy judgment and then there is the healthy judgment. We could call it wrong-minded judgment and right-minded judgment, or we could call it judgment and discernment. But as a leader, I need to know the difference between the two, because I must practice one, and it certainly behooves me and everybody else if I let go of the other, right? I have to know that this is not a place to come and get drunk and hit on the other people here. And I have to be able to ask someone to leave if that's the way, you know, they want to spend their time here. I have to be able to even call the police if I need to call the police. But I have to be able to do all of that without a judgment against the person. You see? What's wrong, Cheryl?
I lost my keys.
You lost your keys.
Seriously, I do not know where they are. I just went through all the garbage. I went through my entire car.
Okay.
And I thought I had them in my pocket.
Well, I can give you a ride to take you where you want to go. And the keys, I'm sure, will turn up. This is what happens when you're unpacking. Stuff gets...
I had them in my hand.
You had them in your hand.
The door.
Oh. Look in your coat pocket. You took off your coat.
I just did.
Oh.
Well, I thought they were in the car. I thought I threw them in the...
We'll find them. We'll find them. All right, so let me look at the bottom part of this particular verse. It says, let me read what Karen has written. Sometimes we can get rid of some potential judgment by having agreements, rules, which leadership makes. Yeah, and that's one of the things that we need to do here. We need to have guidelines. And it's funny, I'll go ahead and talk about that since Karen brought it up. Of course, now we have selected our retreat house caretaker. She's here with Lost Key. However, there were other people who were interested in the job. She wasn't the only one. And there was one particular person who was interested in the job who I was kind of interested in too, somewhat. You know, there were things about her that I was concerned about, but I, you know, there wasn't a great big giant no in me. It was a, huh, you know, let me look at this, huh. But one time she and I were taking a walk here in La Vida, and I mentioned the fact that we were going to have guidelines, and she said, oh, no, no rules, you know, no rules whatsoever. And that's when I kind of knew that she would not be the right retreat house caretaker for us, because there absolutely is going to have to be guidelines here. There's just no doubt about it. I know that because I used to have an open house for about 4 years, maybe even 5 years, There were people coming and staying in my house all the time, coming and going, coming and going. Cheryl just found her keys. They were in her back pocket. Maybe you're just supposed to listen to the teaching and then go. Because I'm talking about enlightened leadership.
No, it's just, it's so funny. I never put them in my bag.
Well, I'm glad you found them.
Yes, I'm here, listening.
But you know, and I've told both Cheryl and Jacqueline this, we cannot imagine what some people are going to come here and do. I mean, we just can't even imagine it because it's so far from what our personalities would do. And so it's absolutely necessary in order to maintain the purpose of the house that we have guidelines. And we even have it written in our policy that if necessary, if someone is refusing to follow the guidelines, we can ask them to leave. Because maintaining the purpose for which this house was guided is paramount, right? It's paramount. You know, we weren't given this house for the heck of it. We were given this house for a specific purpose in order to help people take their individual next step with God, whatever that is. And so we have to make sure this house has the environment that is always suited to that. So yeah, guidelines are necessary. And we'll need to use that right judgment to develop and enforce those guidelines, right? Now we only have 4 minutes left, so I think what that means is I won't get to focus on the second half of this verse today, so I will just read it again, and then we'll focus on the second half of this verse next time, because this, I think the second half of this verse, we can look at line by line. It might even take a full half hour on its own. So this is the second half of the verse. Therefore, the sages manage the work of detached actions. Conduct the teaching of no words. They work with myriad things, but do not control. They create, but do not possess. They act, but do not presume. They succeed, but do not dwell on success. It's because they do not dwell on success that it never goes away, that success never goes away. And just for the fun of it, since we have 3 minutes, let's go ahead and read this verse in another version of the Tao Te Ching. I'm picking up Stephen Mitchell. For those of you who don't know who Stephen is, he's Byron Katie's husband. This is his translation of that same verse. And by the way, one of my little fantasies in life, when I retire, I would like to write a translation of the Tao Te Ching. That's just something that really excites me, but I have to be retired to do it because I can't, I have to be able to focus. So here we go. When people see some things as beautiful, other things become ugly. When people see some things as good, other things become bad. Being and non-being create each other. Difficult and easy support each other. Long and short define each other. High and low depend on each other. Before and after follow each other. Therefore, the master acts without doing anything and teaches without saying anything. Things arise and she lets them come. Things disappear and she lets them go. She has but doesn't possess, acts but doesn't expect. When her work is done, she forgets it. That's why it lasts forever. And what the heck, we have 1 minute left. Let's see what the second verse sounds like when Wayne Dyer translates it. Under heaven, all can see beauty as beauty. Only because there is ugliness. Now that's an interesting, I would actually call that a mistranslation. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he's saying that we wouldn't know beauty if we didn't know ugly. I don't think that's what the Tao is saying. But let's go and read. Under heaven, all can see beauty as beauty, only because there is ugliness. All can know good as good, only because there is evil. Being and non-being produce each other. The difficult is born in the easy. Long is defined by short, the high by the low. Before and after go along with each other. So the sage lives openly with apparent duality and paradoxical unity. The sage can act without effort and teach without words. Nurturing things without possessing them, he works, but not for rewards. He competes, but not for results. When the work is done, it is forgotten. That is why it lasts forever. So there may have been a little more interpretation that went into Wayne Dyer's Wayne Dyer's translation instead of just trying to translate the words.
What I'm hearing is like the ebb and flow, yin and yang. Is that,
I think the yin and yang, and we'll look at it as we go through, but yeah, I think the yin and yang is a total misunderstanding of the Tao Te Ching.
Okay.
I think the people who say it's all about the yin and yang and all of that, I think they have not looked deeply at the Tao Te Ching and they don't know what it's really about.
I know, I haven't.
Yeah, so we'll look at that as we move forward. I think what the Tao Te Ching is really about is emptiness as opposed to balance. Balance happens when emptiness when you are empty, but the
sense focus
is the emptiness, not the balance. And I think people, because they're looking at form, because they're looking at form, which is what the very first verse warns us about, they're focused on the balance, when actually the Tao is focused on the emptiness.
Mm. That's the part.
All right, you guys. So in 2 weeks, I'll be back, and we'll begin doing this for a whole hour, which will be a lot of fun. Yeah. All right. Bye.